You're listening to The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, bringing class to trash since 1977.
Welcome to the Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema. We are back, and this week we got a little something special for you. We brought along one of our favorite people, and I just want to say for the record, I hit record and there's no rehearsal here whatsoever because, you know, we're such professionals here at the GGTMC, but it's Will and Sammy and our good friend Josh. And Josh is back and he brings gifts. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Well, I'm doing great. I know Will's doing great because there's food going on in the background.
About to eat quiche, and we're about to talk to a sweeter Mancunian treat than an Eccles cake, so I'm very good.
Eccles cake. There you go. Anyway. So, yeah, we are back, and this week we're going to talk about a film called GBH from 1983, and this is directed by one David Kent Watson and stars a gentleman named Cliff Twimlow. I had to slow down to say that so I wouldn't get crossed up. We'll talk more about that when we get to the review. But Josh sent this our way as he wanted to come back on the show. And obviously he has an open door policy here at the show. And we love having him on. And this is an opportunity to talk about, well, I'll just say this. I think Josh, he knows us very well. He probably watched this and was like, oh, I know a couple of guys that would find this interesting. And we appreciate that. So we'll get to that a little bit in the review. So, Josh, I don't know if you want to talk about anything you've been doing lately or anything you've been up to. If not, I'll just say that, you know, we can get into what we've been watching and, you know, all that good stuff. And it's great to have you back. But you let me know. If there's anything you want to promote, anything you want to do, just let me know.
Oh, I mean, at the moment, right now, I'm just kind of cruising. I'm hoping to be flying off to India by the end of the week to go find some more incredible films for people to enjoy. It's kind of out of my hands at this point, but hopefully things work out. Yeah, I'm you know, you guys have younger children than I do, and my son graduated from high school in the spring, and so I have fewer responsibilities now, so I'm just watching movies nonstop is what's happening.
Nice, nice.
Living the dream.
Yeah, living the dream.
That's
sit
good.
On the couch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, hey, dreams come in all shapes and sizes. I want to say, for the record, I don't know if I ever told you this, but, you know, you and Troy from Not a Bomb, you guys pushing RRR so hard over the last year. So I just want to thank you for that personally, because me and my son sat down and watched that, and what a glorious experience it was to share that with my son, the cultural differences in film and everything else. And we had such a good time, and he still talks about that movie because it's unlike any other film really in some ways. And so I, you know, you and Troy, I have to give you guys thanks for that, for pushing that so hard, because once that hit Netflix, it's like, well, we're going to check it out. This is not normally something you'd watch with a 12-year-old boy. In saying, when I say that, I mean the length of the film.
Right.
And yet he sat enraptured by the whole thing and was just kind of blown away by, which, if you haven't, folks, if you haven't seen this film by this point, you have to see this film. It's one of the most unique experiences I've had over the last 5 years. So I want to personally thank you for that one.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, that's actually the first real professional, film gig I've ever done. And, you know, I guess I could have, I don't think I could have picked a better place to start. You know, I still, in my office here where I'm sitting right now, I have a 27 by 40 one sheet with my company's logo on it for RRR. And it blows my mind still.
No.
That I was able to be a part of it. So I just hope it brings joy to people forever.
Yeah.
Really. Cause it is just pure joy.
Yeah, it is. It'll be I think it's a timeless movie, to be honest with you. Will, you still haven't seen it, correct?
Correct. Because, well, there's not really a good reason. I should have seen it, but I wanted to watch it with my kids. And
well, I mean, there's always a reason.
There's always, yeah, a multitude of reasons, but I want to watch it with the kids. And I remember watching the Oscars last year. You know, I'd never had an Oscars party. I have a friend who lives nearby. He's very like-minded, love a film. And so we said, hey, man, let's do an Oscar party. And we did like themed food and all that stuff. And it was great. It was a great night. And I remember jumping up and when RRR won and when they performed, and I was like, I was, you know, giving Josh flowers and telling my guys, like, see, like, you know, you got good people fighting the good fight. And look what it did, right? Like, you played your part in that. And it's been a joy to see the exposure that films from Southeast Asia are getting the world over now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the great things.
It's been wonderful.
Yeah, it's one of the great things. You know, I know some people have kind of shunned the streaming services a bit and everything else, but one of the great things about the streaming services is it does make some of this stuff available. So, I mean, you know, count your blessings. That's what I say, because there was a time when you really had to, you had to go through like 16 different websites and you had to find subtitles online. You had to do all kinds of stuff to see a film. So just think about that for a second. All right.
All very true.
And Will, I can't wait for you to see that. As a matter of fact, when we get into what we've been watching, I watched something that you said, a lot of our listeners are like, I can't believe you haven't watched that yet. So I'll talk about that here in a bit, but let's get into that. Let's get into what we've been watching. Josh, what have you been up to lately? You can give us a few here, I'm sure.
Yeah. So the last week has been pretty busy. You know, I came out of October just desperate for anything but a horror movie. Because, you know, I put the limitation on myself that I would watch horror movies during October. And so I came out of it just ready for anything else. And I found some good stuff. So one of the things that I'll hit the highlights. I finally got a chance to watch the new 4K BFI disc of Get Carter, one of Michael Caine's finest moments.
Ooh, nice.
Absolutely brilliant film. You know, that like 10 years in the late 60s, early 70s for Michael Caine that's my sweet spot. So much fun. Another one that I really enjoyed checking out. Well, I did get to see Demons with the Claudio Simonetti, I guess second team Goblin live score.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that you did that. Yes.
Yeah, with my son, and that was great. You know, I showed it to him. It's one of the first Italian horror movies I showed him, because who doesn't love Demons? You know, and you want to leave a good taste in their mouth when they walk out of that stuff and you try and show them new things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of fun. New stuff that I liked, that I got a chance to check out. I just yesterday with my wife watched the latest Alex de la Iglesia horror movie, Venecia Frenia.
Ooh.
Which is it's a giallo-esque.
Oh, don't tease me, man.
A horror film about tourists in Venice. Nice. Who are being hunted down by the locals.
Ooh.
And you know, it's one of those things that, like, I'm a Alex de la Iglesia old head, and so yeah. I watch for everything that he does. And he's done a lot of non horror non-genre stuff. He's done a bunch of like rom-coms and things like that and documentaries over the last few years. And he made and he's done, you know, 30 Coins on Max or HBO.
Oh, yeah.
Over the last few years. But he made this one horror movie that just, you know, I do a little bit of festival circuit stuff, you know, with my critic hat on. Mm-hmm. And it didn't land at any of the festivals that I was going to. It just sort of eked out onto VOD in the last month or so. It's fun. Like it's for sure definitely something to check out. You know, the production design is amazing. You know, Alex Dela Iglesia has an eye like no other for visuals. And it was a lot of fun. So those are the highlights of the things that I've watched recently.
Nice. Nice. Good stuff. Will, what have you been up to? I know you've been up to some stuff.
Couple things. Yeah, like Josh and like a lot of us, I did a lot of horror stuff, all horror or sort of horror centric in some regard. But I'm excited to see that Dela Iglesia one. I got to add that to Letterboxd. I see it's streaming in a few spots here. So let me just get to the stuff I watched. I was telling Sammy off the air that I just switched to an iPhone last night. So
oh boy.
My album is not where it normally is. So I'm just kind of rambling.
Welcome to 2010, my friend.
Yeah, no kidding, man. I ditched the Android and here we are, right? So I'm getting there now. Okay, so went to see The Killer with the missus in theaters, no less.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I knew it was going to be Netflix, but I promised William we'd go see Killers of the Flower Moon together. That was initially the plan with Teresa and I. So I said, sorry, baby, better do Fincher. Fincher's a pretty good consolation prize. Dug it, but like it's good, not great, but even good Fincher, you know, is better than a lot of stuff. Fassbender's a joy. It's a very handsome film in terms of production. But I don't know. I've always felt that Fincher, or at least sort of for the last maybe 10 years, I felt like a lot of his stuff, while well-made and well-crafted, feels kind of anonymous. Like it doesn't really hit for me. Like it is being very, I wouldn't watch it or go in cold and think, oh, this is very Fincher. But I don't know. There's a lot of filmmakers that are really good in Hollywood. Like Soderbergh's another one where maybe if you have a really trained eye on his work that you can pick up stuff, but he's really varied in terms of his approach at times. So
yeah,
I will say just a like quick interruption. The one thing I haven't mentioned that I did watch was Next Goal Wins. And that just reminded me.
Oh yes.
Because you saw The Killer, you know, it has Michael Fassbender's also in Next Goal Wins. It's fine. It's fine.
Interesting.
Fine is fine.
I have maybe unrealistically high standards for Taika Waititi because I enjoy his sense of humor and the sense of fun that he brings to stuff. I feel like it falls firmly in the lower half of his filmography over the years. It's outside of the Marvel stuff that he does, outside of the What We Do in the Shadow stuff that he does. Even still, it's not quite, you know, as it's nowhere near Hunt for the Wilder People.
Oh, wow.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And Boy, even, which is also great. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
That'll do like on a Wednesday night looking for something. At least, you know, the floor is only going to be so low, right?
It picks up towards the end, and my wife had tears in her eyes at the end of the film, and I kind of had been disenchanted long before she started crying. So we'll see, you know.
Yeah. Also, that seems like one, like, that might be an easy sell because we all like Waititi stuff here in this house. So
yeah, it's very family friendly.
Yeah, so there you go.
I will say, Will, I also watched The Killer. I watched it at home, though.
Yeah.
Not in a theater. It wasn't shown anywhere local to me. And I did enjoy it. Maybe a little bit more than you, but not much. I saw your score on Letterboxd. I'd probably be like a half higher than you. So I'm just right in that same ballpark. I want to just mention, you know, without going into detail about it, because maybe someday we'll review it or something else, but I was really kind of stunned by the skill of the fight scene in that film. Like, that kind of came out of nowhere.
I think it was pretty good, and it felt very visceral. It's kind of shot tight, and it felt brutal.
Yeah, it was nasty. Nasty fight scene.
Like, it was kind of like the male version of the Uma and Daryl Hannah, like, trailers fight. Like, it was kind of nasty, down and dirty.
Yeah.
Kind of desperate.
Yeah, good comparison. Yeah. It felt very much like that. It felt very much like two guys who are trained to fight, but they're both on their heels trying to survive. Yeah.
Desperate, man.
And I did not expect that because, you know, I didn't know anything about the film going in other than, you know, the basics. And so I expected it to be, because he establishes as one type of film. And then that scene happens and I'm thinking, wait a minute, am I in a totally different type of film all of a sudden?
Yeah, it is a bit of a shift from kind of how detached and sort of, I'm certain, like, intentionally, it's arm's length away from everything, right?
Yeah, and I will say this for the record, that even if we're going to review it, or if we ever do, I'll easily say that make or break scene in that film is the scene between Fassbender and Tilda Swinton. Is
great. Oh, I knew that's where you're going, man. When I was watching that scene, I think I even leaned over to my wife and said, "That's Sammy's girl, man."
Yeah, man. I just want to say, I don't want to review the film, but I feel like I'm reviewing the film. But Fassbender has he has this great quality of these dead eyes in this film. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've seen an actor pull that off in quite some time. He has this look of no emotion, yet there's some type of something you can read in his eyes. It's almost like I wonder if they CGI'd like no blinking for him.
Who knows, man?
Yeah, I was hypnotized. He's good in the film, but you know.
He's a stud though, man. Like, he's a guy you can count on. Like, he's going to be good. And he doesn't thumb his nose at genre stuff, which I love.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a good actor, man. Yeah.
A short film, too, by the way. We should say, you know, released an hour and was hour 55 minutes, maybe? 2 hours?
Yeah, maybe 2 hours. Yeah, 2 hours. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we live in a world where 2 hours is a short film. Yes.
That's right.
Especially on streaming, you know?
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. They get very indulgent now.
Yes.
Yeah, you can.
Yep.
You can. Rewatch Totally Killer. Teresa had seen it. So good, man. So fun.
Yeah.
Just really well written for what it is. Stays in its lane, just ticks all the boxes, was definitely one of the highlights for October for me.
I need to check that out. I really do. Everybody seems to either like it or love it. They're not really.
That's it, but it's fun, man. I think Khan is the woman's name, the director. I'm very excited to see what she does next.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's one of the, well, she, you know, the funny thing is that she's done, you know, sitcoms for years. So she's one of the producers behind things like Fresh Off the Boat and a lot of those sort of fish out of water, you know, sitcoms of the last decade.
Yeah.
I think this is her first feature.
Wow. Pretty assured. Looks good. Fun. Nice. Nice. Doesn't overindulge in things. You know, it's good. It's good. Hmm. Go from kind of a fresh debut to 10th entry in a franchise. Last night, man, I thought of Sammy again. I watched Saw X or Saw 10.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for doing that for me.
Well, I'll tell you what. This was good.
Yeah, now, so I've heard that.
Yay.
Yeah, listen, this is for the 10th entry in a franchise. I liked it. I really, all of us came away, and I watched less sort of gruesome stuff nowadays. I felt pretty soft watching that like vacuum eyeball scene at the beginning, but I'm like, I gotta harden myself up, man. I'm getting weak in my old age. But sound design's good. You actually care about what old Jigsaw, man. It's got a heartbeat. It's got a sort of a melancholy tone to it. It's
Come on. I've heard that.
Good. I'm talking about the benchmark is Saw franchise, right? Like, for a Saw film, it's definitely top tier.
Okay. See, you know,
I'll say this. My wife and I sort of stumbled into a Saw marathon over the summer. Uh-huh. Accidentally, completely. Uh-huh. And most of them are absolute garbage.
Yes. You're right. You're very right.
So, and I was like, there are three good movies out of nine.
Mm.
Good batting average.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
You're being, yes. And sometimes I wonder if there really are three or if you're just being kind because there's six others that are so bad.
Oh yeah, well no, there's like some that are negative good.
Yeah,
so yeah, the negative stars.
Yes,
if you could. But you know, I had my son over because you know my son graduated from high school and so he's out on his own and so I have to like grab him in whenever I can.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, come over. We'll watch the first Saw movie. He hadn't seen it before, so we watched the first Saw movie and then immediately went to the theater.
Hmm.
Like 15 minutes after the movie ended.
Really.
We went to go see Saw X, and he loved it, and I loved it.
Nice.
It's, you know, the thing is, like, it's placed immediately after Saw 1, but there's, if you don't know the history, which is incredibly convoluted, it's the most ridiculous chronology of any series.
Anyway. I'm not saying something.
Yeah, no, it's bananas. It's impossible. And the only reason I understood any of it is because I watched them all in like 2 days, you know?
Oh man.
Were you pumped for the Costas Mandalore cameo or what?
Oh my God. It was so much fun. You know what the one big tell as far as like when the film took place was Amanda's wig. Like,
oh,
that
man, they did
that
her
wig was so
that.
Fucking awful.
Horrible wig. Horrible.
Oh, I do like a good horrible wig in a film.
This is a maybe, dare I say, all timer. Like all of us watching it, my wife,
oh, for sure.
Her wig is like they did her no favors.
No.
Well, see,
they did her dirty as fuck.
I thought
dirty,
I was out man. About a couple years ago. I went through and did this as kind of an experiment to see if. Maybe
wore a wig like that?
No. Well, I do that about once a month usually. I try a wig, usually made from different animals, or you know,
for 5 to 7 days a month is fine.
Yes,
but I went through the Saw franchise and I stopped. I didn't do Spiral and I didn't do 10. So, damn it, if I'm not going to have to do 10 because people keep saying.
Solid.
It at least has some, you know, it has some teeth, which oddly, I really only still feel like is even as far as they went on some of the sequels, I still only feel like the first and maybe the second one has any real teeth. Even though they would go further and further each time. But everybody's, all the people that, you know, I listen to have said that Saw X is the real deal. So damn it if I don't have to watch another Saw movie.
You could do worse. We've all done worse. Mm. I wish I could cue up the soft, the da-na-na, da-na-na.
Yeah. I think Saw 4, 5, and 6 was about, it's a miracle I made it through those three.
Oh, man.
Oof.
I just got one more quick thing I'll talk about.
Okay.
Go.
So I love Wes Anderson. I know that he can be an acquired taste. If you don't like him, his stuff doesn't work for you very clearly. But I love Wes Anderson. And so everyone went to bed and the wife and I wanted to just watch something quick. And we threw on The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. Absolutely loved it. What a joy. And I think it was really smart of Anderson. Kudos to Netflix for giving him the platform. I think it was really smart of him to do this in like a 40-minute or 41-minute kind of bite-sized thing. Because as much of a delight as it was, this would have like the way it's presented, it would have really overstayed its welcome at like 2 hours. So for length, loved it. Fantastic.
Yeah. I think he did like a little series of short films for Netflix, right?
Yeah.
I want to pitch one more thing. One other thing that I forgot to mention. One night my wife and I were just sitting on the couch and she was ready to go to bed. And I picked, I was on Tubi, which is the people's platform. Everything's on Tubi.
It really is the people's platform. So yeah. I love Tubi as well. It is a godsend, Tubi.
It is amazing. And I stumbled across this TV movie from 1981 called Fallen Angel.
Oh.
Which is it's an anti pedophile film.
Oh, yeah, I've seen this. I know what you're talking about. I saw that you watched this. Yes.
It's incredible. It stars Dana Hill who you wouldn't know unless you've seen everyone's seen National Lampoon's European Vacation. She's Audrey in the second National Lampoon film.
Yes.
And then Richard Mazur, who everyone knows as soon as you see his face.
Yep.
as a pedophile groomer. It's so good and so disturbing.
Yeah.
And it's hard to believe it was on TV because it's just so upsetting.
Yeah.
But really amazing film.
Yeah.
See this.
There was that era of that kind of stuff. I remember the Different Strokes episode. I mean, they were really pushing that kind of stuff when I was a kid, and that stuff was really disturbing even then. And
oh, for sure.
I've seen Fallen Angel before. I saw it probably back when it originally aired. And Richard Macer is so troubling in that film that every time I see Richard Macer, that's the first film I think of. And it's not even The Thing. Believe it or not, folks, John Carpenter's The Thing. He's the gentleman that likes the dog so much. He's the dog handler in The Thing, if you guys want to kind of put a name to the face.
Or Stanley in the TV It. That was my first.
Yeah, And you guys have, and people have seen Richard Macer in a thousand things.
Stuff.
In everything. He's in everything.
Yeah, he's everything. And still working today, I'm pretty sure.
His business, everything.
Yeah, I mean, he's been.
I sat there with my wife watching the film. She was going to go to bed, and we started watching it, and she was even saying, like, I would do that. Like,
yeah,
I would pose for these pictures for this guy. It's truly upsetting. So if you have a light trigger, then, you know, maybe skip it, but it's an incredible film.
Yeah, it is. Especially for a TV movie. Again, that's,
oh yeah,
that's an era when they were making really quality TV films, and mm-hmm. that's toward the back end of that, but they were really doing it back then. Yeah. Yeah. I saw that you watched that. I was like, wow, Josh just decided to go down a dark road for no reason.
You know, something to go to sleep to.
Double it up with a little girl that lives down the lane, and maybe.
I'll say it's like Cypher in the Snow. Cypher in the Snow is the other thing that I grew up with, and that was the vibe.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting when actors take on the pedophile role and what their career ends up becoming. I think, you know, again, Richard Macer, not leading man, good looks, but certainly a great character actor.
Yeah.
Dylan Thomas, I think of all the time,
who is
a great actor, but he's so disturbing in that Todd's
Happiness.
Yeah. Oh, man, God, that is so that's a rough watch. Oof.
Yeah,
man, it's just rough when actors decide to go down that road. And, you know, I sometimes wonder if it's career suicide in some ways.
Yeah.
I sometimes wonder that. All right. I got a few things. I finally watched, was it Titan? Is that what it's called? Titan?
Oh,
Titan?
Yeah.
I finally watched this thing after everybody kept saying, hey, watch this movie. And I was like, yeah, I'll check it out. And I never did. So I was like, you know, we had been doing the podcast a couple weeks ago. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to fire it up. I'm just going to go for it right now. And whoo, man, I was not prepared. And I don't know if anybody can be prepared for this. This is wow. This is transgressive cinema, and I don't really know how to explain it. I know that I was hypnotized by the film itself. It's wonderful. I know I'm not breaking any news to anybody that loves transgressive cinema here, but man, I didn't know where it was going. Even though I guess I kind of knew where it was going to go, I really kind of had no idea where it was going to go. And then by the time it gets to the end, I have no idea what I'm watching anymore. And the performances are heartbreaking and disturbing. It's just, it's a wonderful film. It's a wonderful film. I mean, it would have been easily in my top 10 if we did a top 10 that year.
Oh, same, man.
It was wonderful. It was just great. Well,
man, it's,
yeah.
Julie DeCrenell's an incredible, like, two for two. Like, I'm really excited for anything she does.
Yeah. Not a feel-good movie. I just want to warn people that maybe...
In some ways, it is.
Well, yeah, I guess you could say that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This sort of hope that, you know, family may look different to people, but...
I guess it depends on who you identify with. I tell you that father character...
Vincent McDonald, great French actor, yeah.
Oh, my God, what a performance from that guy.
He's always good.
Man. Oh, heartbreaking, some moments there.
There were some, yeah, there was.
A couple other things. I don't know if either one of you have seen this yet or not, but have either one of you watched When Evil Lurks yet?
I'm waiting to.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I watched with my wife last week.
Did you like it, Josh?
Oh, we loved it.
Yeah, I loved it as well. I loved it so much, as a matter of fact, I almost picked it for the show to make Will watch it. That's how sometimes we will do that. Sometimes we'll see something and we kind of get blown away by it. And we're like, you know what? I'm going to make the other person that's on the show watch this film next week.
Watch it. Yeah, I wanted to watch it Halloween night, but I couldn't overturn like our youngest saying, we got to watch Halloween. It takes place on Halloween. I'm like, you got a point.
Yeah. Well,
I watched Hubie Halloween. So, I mean,
there you go. Y'all. I watched, oddly, I watched When Evil Lurks on Halloween. And, like Teton, I did not know what I was getting into. And on the surface, it looks like one thing, but it is so much more than that. And was really kind of blown away by the experience. And I can't wait for Will to see it so we can talk about it more. This is one of those films where the less said, the better. So definitely not a one I want to have too much conversation about. I'll just say that, for the record, there was just moments when I was completely shocked. And it's hard at 50 to get shocked anymore. But I watched Teton and When Evil Lurks, and I'm like, wow. there's some people out there that really want to shock me. And then I watched
one hell of a week.
Yeah.
That is a hell of a week.
I watched GBH as well. And so, you know, hey, what a shocking week. Shocking couple weeks.
Had you seen Terrified? Had you seen his previous film?
I had not. Honestly, I had not. And it's I'm going to now.
Yeah.
I mean, checking out. I'm just going to say it flat out right now that I believe this is the horror film of the year. Like this is the one. Like I can't think of any other film I saw this year that was as powerful as this one was to me. So, wow. Yeah.
It's brutal. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's quite the bruiser.
It's Martyr's level of brutal.
Oh my God. I'm glad. Watch it with the kids then.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah, you might not want to. Yeah, you might not want to.
I will not. Quick, did you watch anything else, Rick?
Only one other thing. I watched I watched The Killer, but I watched the Sly documentary on Netflix, which I quite enjoyed. You know, it was nice to kind of just kick back with Sly for an hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes, and hear him talk about his career. You know, I mean, he does love to talk about himself. And, you know, I mean that in the best way, you know, I mean, I really do. He's just, you know, he's a movie icon, right? I mean, he's a guy that's almost bigger than movies themselves. And he's always interesting to listen to, even if sometimes I think his stories are, you know, they've kind of grown in their, kind of legendary status. But I still think about, you know, I can't think of, there's only a handful of people I can think of that are so stubborn. Then, you know, I think about the story of him being offered almost like $250,000 to walk away from Rocky, and he just will not walk away from Rocky. And this is at a time when he has nothing.
Yeah.
And they're offering him $250,000, enough money to live off of potentially in the 70s for decades.
Yeah, and he could have kept writing and tried to parlay that into something else, right?
And he just believed in the project so much, he refused to walk away. And I still think about that story, and it just makes me often think about Rocky and Rocky II and what those films mean to me as a kid growing up, and how, you know, Rocky III, IV, V, VI, those are all kind of different experiences for their own. VI is kind of goes back to the 70s a little bit, but those III, IV, and V are definitely different experiences completely, but especially III and IV, they're Stallone movies more than they're Rocky movies. Right. But Rocky 1 and 2, those movies are special movies. And then also just thinking about First Blood. I mean, to go through your whole career and have three films like Rocky 1, Rocky 2, and First Blood, I just, you know, I mean, there's not a lot of actors who can say that. And of course, he's had other great films too, but man, those three alone, it just made me want to go back and watch those. And I didn't, but I really do want to rewatch them sometime soon. So. It might become.
I mean, we live in a franchise culture now, and it's hard to imagine someone who's done more for franchise culture than Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
You know, as far as having, you know, the Rocky franchise and you know, and also the Rambo franchise and Expendables. Also,
yeah.
Like no one does that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if there'll ever be another person like that. I don't know. I mean, you'll have guys like Vin Diesel and stuff who have 9 and 10 film franchises, but I don't know if you'll ever have a guy who has multiple character franchises again. I don't know if you'll ever have that. Maybe Jackie Chan, maybe, but maybe not, because he's really, he's only got the one franchise, right? Well, he's got two, I guess.
He's got a few, but they're like 2-3 films. It's not like,
yeah,
really. Yeah.
They're not continuing to this day.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's all I got. That's all I watched. Yeah. Would you want to add something, Will?
Just very quick sidebar. So to pull back the curtain for a minute, I was lucky enough this year to get the Halloween pick. Josh, I got to ask you, I was so close. In fact, I said to Rick, because we talked about Argentinian horror, I was going to pick the film History of the Occult. Have you seen this?
I have not.
So it's kind of like found footage meets political thriller.
Okay.
And I was so close to picking it, but I got kind of cold feet at the last minute because I wanted to pick something that, you know, kind of well-loved, more of a treat than a trick, I guess, for the Halloween episode. So I'm going to still check that one out. I know some friends really dug it. So, you know, it looks pretty cool, man. It's, yeah, kind of a political thriller meets found footage horror with witches and sort of,
I've never seen this either, so I need to check it out. But what a great time we live in. I think we are on the cusp of the next kind of great horror run, and I don't know where that's going to completely come from. I don't know if it's going to come from America. It certainly has been coming, at least for me and for Will, and I'm sure Josh, I know overseas we've been seeing some great horror films come out of, you know, Spain and France and places like that. But I wonder if we're not on the cusp of another kind of great run, just when you think these things are done. Again, I'll just say this, when Evil Lurks is not breaking new ground, but it's the way the story is told and the vision of that story. And you're just going to look at it, and then if you watch this with somebody, I watched it by myself, but if you watch this with somebody, it's the kind of film where you would be looking over at the person you're watching it with. Like, are you seeing what I'm seeing?
Hey, you want to know something, Sammy? I'm looking over right now virtually at both of you, and I'm looking at the clock.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Check. I'm looking at the clock. You know why? You know what time it is?
What time is it?
Josh, do you know what time it is?
What time is it?
It's time for this or that.
Now comes the end. I want to say for the record that luckily my mouse was hovering over the this or that theme when you decided to impromptu go to there was no rehearsal to that. Will just went into it. And so I don't know. At this point, though, I mean, as I've often said, part of the loveliness of this or that sequence is the fact that we have no idea what we're doing and when we're going to go into it. So, and I'm never prepared as I am again this week.
Well, I was waiting for any sort of a key word that I could somehow shoehorn, you know, a segue into.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I got one this or that.
I mean, it's
an obvious one in a way. But is it? I don't know. We'll see. It's a three-way. I'm just going to say that for the record. Yeah. So I'll just, Will, go ahead. Hit us up.
Live?
Yeah, we're live. I mean, buddy, I've never stopped hitting record. We're going.
Lord, wow. Good thing I didn't swear there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, it's not like we haven't swore on the show before.
We'll go to our guests first. I got to ask, pancakes and bacon or chicken and waffles?
Oh. Yeah, Southern guy. We'll see what he says here.
I mean, I've grown to love chicken and waffles over the years.
Yeah.
You sound like a man that's convinced in his chicken and waffles, though. Is that legit? That's the answer?
That's. I'm going with it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to go with as a guy who, when I was younger, thought the sound of chicken and waffles sounded disgusting. As a person who's had chicken and waffles several times over the last 5 years, actually to the point where I probably shouldn't be having chicken and waffles anymore, I've come to love chicken and waffles so much it's ridiculous. So chicken and waffles.
So I love both.
Nothing wrong with pancakes and bacon. That was the first choice, right?
Yes, I love both, but I am Canadian.
Yeah, you are Canadian. Yeah. Well, you can put maple syrup on chicken and waffles, though, too.
You can. It's delicious.
It is. It's quite delicious. Yeah. Look, I just talked about pancakes earlier today. It's something I talk about way too often because I can't have them as much as I used to. And, yeah, there's not really a day that goes by that I don't discuss pancakes with somebody. It's really become a problem. It's kind of like when a doctor tells you you can't have red meat anymore. It's like, really?
Oh, yeah.
Really? What did I do to you, dude? You know, I mean, I get it, but
are you talking proper bacon or back bacon? Because that's like the Canadian.
You can pick your poison, man.
Yeah, man, makes me really want a bacon and tomato sandwich right now with a slice of cheese and some mayo.
Come on, man! We just started this thing. We got to get through the end. Come on.
Oh, I really want one right now.
I'll get off the food tip, but only for a minute. Unless you want to do yours.
Right? Yeah, no, I'll throw mine in there. I just want to throw it in there because I always try to do one that's show related because I'm not as original as Will, because Will has a mind where he's always kind of doing this or that. For those of you guys who don't know, he can be walking down the sidewalk and he kind of Jay Leno style just walk up to somebody and be like, it's time for this or that. And they look at him like he's crazy. And fun. They have no idea. And he's like, poutine or French fries? Come on.
I love hitting people with randoms, man.
Yeah, but it's fun, right? But mine's a three-way, all related to vanity projects, which is related to our project this week with our review. Oh, yeah. So Cliff Twimlow, John DeHart, or Neil Breen?
Ooh. I'm going to go Twimlow, man. I feel like, and I'll say it now, if he had gotten the hands, it's like Sidaris, or even a little bit earlier, Meyer or someone. I really think he could have been a cult, like a kind of a cult icon. He did have charisma, and he just wanted to stay close to home. But, yeah, he was the real deal, I think, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I love those references. I feel like he's for sure in that ballpark. I think Twimlow's the man.
So Here's the thing. I agree with you guys completely. First of all, you know, Neil Breen, he doesn't have the look, but he's got the insanity, right?
Yeah.
John DeHart, the vanity part, huh? John DeHart's got a whole other level of insanity. The look is completely gone. But Twimlow has this, and we love passion projects and vanity projects on the show, and that's one of the reasons why I think Josh wanted to come on and talk about this film. Twimlow has got a quality that I really like, which is carved from granite. He's got a great face. His acting skills are not amazing, but you can see that there's potential there. There's
charisma.
Yeah, there's charisma, and there's potential there to be solid. His action, although choreographed in the film, we'll talk about here in a little while, he could have made it. He could have made it. He really could have. I really do believe that.
Had he hopped over the Atlantic, I really do think he could have been at least a culty kind of Sidaris star. But you know what's weird? Not to talk about him too much, but it's topical here. I don't want to forget to mention this. I think he loved Charles Bronson. I think people say, oh, Bronson. But to me, the guy that I feel like he emulates in terms of the good time gang with his friends and the charm in the women and the fist fights, it's a Burt Reynolds. Like, he's like a Burt Reynolds, like the Mancunian Burt Reynolds.
Hmm. I can see that. I mean, we'll talk about that more when we do the review, but yeah. I can see a little bit of that.
You know, I feel like what he has, at least as far as, you know, jumping him over the John DeHart hurdle, is that he has the stick-to-itiveness, you know, that's the energy to get past one film and just make a whole bunch of movies.
Yeah.
That no one's seen, apparently. But he didn't give a shit. Like, he just kept working, you know?
Yeah. I admire those guys who just, you know, they believe, you know, and some guys make it off that premise. Again, I just talked about Stallone, right? Who just, you know, shot for the stars and he got there. But Twimlow, in a similar vein, he did the same thing, and unfortunately, he didn't get there, and he was destined for cult status. And it's really a shame he died young and stuff, and he probably didn't get to live to see his kind of cult status at least. That's kind of a shame of it all.
Yeah, I mean, I think like at least in comparison to Neil Breen, you know, Neil Breen saw what he was doing and then sort of leaned into it.
Yes. You know,
in a way that's not as authentic as what, you know, Twemla was doing. Yeah. So authenticity will always win the day for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's an earnestness to what he did that really is admirable.
Yeah. And a love of movies, I think, too. I don't really feel with the other guys. I feel like it's more of a love of pay attention to me. With Twemlow, I feel like it's a love of, hey, pay attention to me, but also, isn't this cool? Check this movie out I made.
Yeah. Hey, Josh, do you have any before we keep yammering on?
I'm good.
Okay.
No, I'm good.
We'll just do a couple more here. Iron Eagle or No Retreat, No Surrender?
Oh. I'm all JCVD all day. I have to go with that. The final, you know, it's one of the greatest training montage films of all time. You know, the final battle with JCVD on the ropes. I can't, you know, that's whatever, 5 minutes of the movie, but it's the best 5 minutes of all time. So I'm okay with
it. Nice.
Yeah. There would have been a time where Iron Eagle would have easily been the answer for me here, but as time has gone on, I've really started, you know, I've loved, you know, JCVD more and more as time has gone on. And, I'm going to go No Retreat, No Surrender as well. Man, I do love Iron Eagle though. That's a tough one, you know, although I got to say I rewatched Iron Eagle, I guess what, 5 or 10 years ago. And like Firefox, one of the problems I have with both of those films is there's a lot of, this sounds more dirty than it actually is, there's a lot of cockpit shots and everything, and it just seems, it's very claustrophobic for a film about air battle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love the 80s-ness of Iron Eagle. I'll say that. I certainly love that.
Absolutely. I'm also an overstreet on that one. I love both. Both, you know, we're all of a certain vintage. So both of those would have been very involved in our youth, but I got to go No Retreat as well for all the reasons you guys have said. Ed Lauder or Richard Lynch?
Well, I mean, I'm going to chime in quickly on this one because I feel like, did Lauder play a lot of bad guys? Lynch seemed like he almost always is the bad guy.
Poor Lynch, man.
Yeah, he's almost always the heavy. You know, his looks don't help, but he's almost always the heavy, right? And Lauder's great. I mean, I guess he's the heavy as far as, like, police chiefs people don't get along with.
Ball busting. Yeah.
But, I mean, I love Ed Lauder. I love him. I've loved him forever. I'll never forget us talking about Death Wish 3 with, you know, geriatric Bronson Lauder running through the streets firing guns. It's such a ridiculous sight to behold. And every time I see him, I'm just excited to see him all over again. Love him.
So you're the Lauder.
I'm a Lauder.
Okay.
I think I'm a Lynch. I think I'm going to go with Richard Lynch on this one. He has a look, you know. Ed Lauder has a look for sure. But I think when I see Richard Lynch, I want to punch that guy in the fucking face, and that certainly helps.
Ed Lauder would have punched him in the face.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if there isn't a film that Lauder and Lynch are not in together.
I got for that.
Yeah, I'd be amazed if they didn't cross paths.
Their paths had to have crossed.
Did Bronson and Lynch cross paths?
Oh, that's a good question, man. Oh, we know Lauder did, obviously. Did Lynch and Bronson? I got to find out.
Yeah.
We know Norris and Lynch did.
Yeah, we definitely know Norris and Lynch did. Oh, I mean, Lynch crossed paths with a lot of people. I mean, I think people forget that he crossed paths with a lot of guys.
Yeah, he did. I'm going to go – this is a tough one, man, but I love both. I'm going to go Lynch in, like, if this was a Marvel What If, I would have loved to have seen – Bob Rafelson tap Richard Lynch instead of Jack Nicholson, and I love Jack, and just throw him in the King of Marvin Gardens or something. Just do something with him, man.
By tap, you mean select, not tap, right?
Yeah, let me be clear. I don't have science fiction, penned about.
We getting some, Rafelson. We getting some fan fiction here from you, a little bit on your this or that. So.
Some Slash. It's called Slash.
Yeah. Slash. Yeah.
Okay.
No Slash fiction with Rapelson and Lynch. Good Lord, man.
Wow. That is, man, that is not a pair that I want to see knock pairs. That's all I'm going to say. Nope. Yikes.
Knocking plums, man. Woo. But yeah, Dern and Lynch together. Alan Burstyn would have been something to see in the film again, not in some sort of weird sex triangle thing. I'm going to move on quick. Give you one more.
Okay.
Two horror sequels. And this is kind of like leaning into Josh because I think he digs both. We're going to see which one he digs more.
All right.
Return of the Living Dead Part 3.
Oh.
Texas Chainsaw Next Generation.
Oh.
Oh, that's brutal. I mean, I think I have to go with Next Generation just because it feels like it's more part of the mythology of the series.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
No, it does. Yes.
You know, I know there's a resurgence of energy and of appreciation for Return of the Living Dead Part 3, but I never saw it. It felt like a horror movie that somebody made that then they were like, oh, we can just title this.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, this thing, and then people will buy it, you know, and that's just not how I roll. So
yeah,
there you go.
I like where your head's at on that one. I'm going to agree. You know, Todd and I don't think, Will, you were on that show, but I think Todd and I we reviewed Next Generation, and that movie, we talked about this actually a couple of weeks ago with Texas Chainsaw Massacre Films. That film, yeah, that film has aged like fine wine.
Mm-hmm.
In a weird way. When I first saw it, I thought, well, this is just a rehash and it's just kind of silly. But actually, there's a lot of subtext to that movie. And it's kind of interesting. It's not kind of interesting. It's incredibly interesting. And I quite like it. Matter of fact, it might be my third or fourth favorite of that franchise.
Bold.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it a lot. But of course, Will and I also, you know, we put it out there, I think a couple weeks ago, that we actually liked that reboot they put out on Netflix a couple, you know,
we loved it,
well, years ago or whatever. Yeah, so
no, for sure.
I don't know, there are some bad Leatherface films, but I think The Next Generation is definitely one of the better ones. Really, yeah, really, really leans into that sexual identity crisis
and the weird feverish kind of, it's really weird, and it almost has like this Friedkin bug kind of like feverish nutso energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weird one. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw both of these films in the last, say, 5 to 10 years, give or take. I saw this one, TCM, like a couple years ago. Adored it. Saw The Return Part 3 because I was very, you know, once bitten, twice shy after Part 2, which, you know, Josh, yeah. we talked
Don't,
about.
Let's not talk about it.
Let's not talk about it. So I just avoided 3 forever because I like 3. I think it's solid. Is it in the spirit of, you know, the original? Maybe not. Maybe. I don't know. But I did think it was better than it had any business being for me. But my expectations were very low. So there you go.
Yeah. Nice. I will say one of the things I do appreciate about 3 is I am a huge mark for Melinda Clark. So
yeah,
I'll say that. At one point she was quite the thing for me.
And you know what? She's good in the film. I think that film has a little more heartbeat than, I don't know.
I haven't seen her much recently. I think she does a lot of TV nowadays and stuff. And I just really haven't come across her much in anything, and obviously she's an older lady now, but she was a red hot commodity for a moment there, and I was quite interested, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes, sir.
Kind of like
there's striking imagery.
Yeah.
Associated with that film.
Yes. Yeah. Kind of like the Ed Lauter Richard Lynch threesome. Was it Ed Lauter Richard Lynch or was it Ed Lauter? No, it was Richard Lynch and Bob Rafelson, right? Wow. Melinda Clark, a little bit of a resurgence recently because I think Vincent put out Killer Tongue on Blu-ray. So
did they really?
Killer Tongue. Yeah, I think they did. I want to believe they did. And she has quite the bodysuit in that film, let me tell you. Yikes. Woo. There we go.
Lord.
Anyway. All right, that's all for This or That. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and discuss this little film we picked this week called GBH. Grievous Bodily Harm? That's the...
Grievous Bodily Harm.
Is it Grievous? Yeah. One. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So
with the Tuxedo Warrior.
Yeah, with the Tuxedo Warrior. We'll explain all that here in just a few minutes. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. So we are going to discuss a straight-to-video film from the 80s. Now, occasionally we do these films. We don't do them as much as we used to. Kind of when we started, we really did a lot more of this stuff. And I think as the show has developed and grown, we want to talk about everything. And there's just only so much time. And right now we're only doing one film at a time. But this is a film that is definitely in our ballpark, and I'm glad that Josh selected it for us to talk about. This film is called GBH, 1983. It's only 73 minutes long. It's on YouTube, for the record. I'll give you guys the same warning that Josh gave us. There's another film on there called GBH. You're going to want to look for the one. I guess it has a man with an axe on the cover, if I remember right, in the still on YouTube as well, like the film cover.
Yep.
Okay. Not for the squeamish, it says, more brutal than The Long Good Friday. So if those of you who are fans of The Long Good Friday, this film's selling itself. GBH it stands for Grievous Bodily Harm, or Grievous Bodily Harm, however you want to say that. And here's the plot synopsis. A bouncer is called in to help fight off a mob boss who is trying to take over local nightclubs. Very simple premise. Directed by David Kent Watson, starring one Cliff Twimlow, written by one Cliff Twimlow, who also wrote music for the film, and really is this kind of Renaissance man type of character that I got to be honest with you, even for street cred, I couldn't even sit here and tell you that I knew anything about this guy until the last couple of weeks. And I'm not ashamed of that, because it's been a gift now that I'm very thankful for, and we'll talk more about that. But this film does star Cliff Twimlow, Jane Cunliffe. These names are also Anthony Schaefer, Brett Sinclair, Jerry Harris, Lenny Holworth, John St. Ryan as Big Nick Rafferty, one of Will's favorites. Yeah, one of Will's favorites. And even somebody named Clara Bow, who's at the who oddly didn't change her name and is in the Zoo Disco at some point. She's trying to maintain some of that Clara Bow cred. And I don't know if it carried her any further than this. So this came up as a selection from Josh. So I'm going to kind of let Josh, I know one of us will probably lead on the review, but I'm going to let Josh kind of, if you don't mind, Josh, kind of tell us why you wanted to come on the show and talk about this film in particular.
Sure. So, I mean, I've had this in my hard drive for years, and just hadn't quite found the opportunity to actually watch it. And, I was just thinking about this today, that the first time I was on the show was 10 years ago. And I feel like I've been sort of circling around what I feel are sort of GGTMC style films that whole time. You know, the first, it was actually the very first time I was on the show in 2013. Sam, you weren't there. It was just me and Will, and we did Io Au Paura.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. I remember that.
100 years ago. And we did that, and we did Day of the Beast on my first appearance.
Yeah.
And that was my first shot at the GGTMC. And that was, like, for sure, at the time, you know, Italian conspiracy, you know, thriller. Like, that's in the wheelhouse. And then I've done a bunch of other stuff. Like, we've done, I don't know, 6 or 7 shows at this point. And I wanted to bring it back. Like, let's do something that's in the wheelhouse. Like, yeah. This is what the Gentleman's Guide was built on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is
this kind of film.
Yeah.
And I wanted to bring it back, you know, and I'd heard about this film for years and I never actually watched it. And you know, we talked, off air about, the fact that Twemlo is, experiencing a kind of resurgence in some circles, and it felt like just the right time to talk about GBH. And it is, like, it's GGTMC, you know, through and through.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't think of anyone I would want to talk about this more with than you two.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely true. No truer statement could be said than that. I started watching this and I was like, yes, I know exactly why this was a selection. Like, within like 5 minutes, I was like, oh boy, here we go. Right in our wheelhouse. I think of all the films that we've talked about over the years, Parole Violators, obviously Road to Revenge, which we did recently, even though we had talked about it for a decade before that, and so many more that we've talked about over the years. These are the kind of special little nuggets of cinema history. These guys that, by power of sheer will, they're going to get a movie made. And
oh, hell yeah.
And you just got to admire their tenacity and the way they stick to it. And sometimes the results are quite interesting. So I don't know who wants to lead on it. Will, I don't know if you want to or if you want me to. I'll leave it up to you, or if Josh wants to. I mean,
I don't know if Josh wants to.
Before. Yeah. I'll
defer.
Okay.
I'll defer.
All right.
Okay. So, Rick, I will ask you, do you want to? You want me to? I'm happy to roll either which way.
I think, you know, we share such a simple mindset of love for this kind of thing. I feel comfortable that you will speak the truth.
Okay.
As so, Thomas Jane says, we are both men of the cloth, and Josh is obviously one of those as well.
This is absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. That cloth being denim. Maybe with
yeah, well yeah, definitely tuxedo material this week.
And this week it's tuxedo material. So this is the interesting thing about this film, as Josh and Sammy have said, is it is just saturated in this brute Fabergé and baby oil and you know, champagne and cocaine and a few Eastern European supplements. Eccles cakes. It's about a superstar bouncer.
It's Roadhouse.
It's Roadhouse
before Roadhouse. Fuck Roadhouse. This is Roadhouse.
Hey, GBH put Roadhouse on Roadhouse.
Right? Okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody maybe behind the scenes on Roadhouse saw this somehow, some way. I don't know. Could be possible.
Yeah, and I love Roadhouse, right? There was a little cheekiness there, but let's give it up to the real one, the OG in the superstar bouncer realm.
Yeah. Roadhouse is kind of like a shiny new Corvette of bouncer movies, whereas this is the old reliable, you know, Land Rover maybe.
Yeah, maybe so, man. And I'll say this. Look, we're going to talk about this film having some budgetary and technical restraints and creative restraints.
Well,
but here's the thing. We talked about our friend Josh fighting the good fight. And we have friends that, you know, that work in film and in various capacities. And we're always happy to see them do well. All Rick and I do is we talk about them. But One of the reasons a film like this, outside of the obvious like subject matter and material, is that Twemlow was about it.
Mm-hmm. He was real deal.
The real deal. This guy was kind of a almost like a mythic figure in Manchester. He was a bouncer. He wrote novels. He wrote music that had been adapted. It had been used in TV shows. Like he was like the Mancunian William Smith in a way. Spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did everything, you know, and he loved films. He wanted to get a film made, and he just kept, like I said, to me, especially if you watch the documentary, which is a really great companion piece, Josh, to pull back the curtain, do you know like where this is at with Severin as far as streaming or distribution or anything like that?
So I don't know for sure, but I will say our friends at Severin Films, David Gregory is a friend of mine. And so when I selected this film, I went back to him because Mancunian Man, the documentary we're all talking about, is the story of Cliff Twemlow's life in film. They will release it at some point because they paid for it, you know, so they gotta get it out somehow. But you know, it's a fascinating look at this guy, and you know, for film fans, it's interesting because it's directed by Jake West. If you don't know Jake West, he directed the horror film Evil Aliens years ago.
Yeah.
A lot of fun, just a lot of fun. And also part of the project was Mark Morris, and Mark Morris and Jake West are Nucleus Films, and they do a lot of stuff with the Video Nasties, and they've done a lot of stuff with the Video Nasty documentaries that Severin's put out over the years. So I can't imagine that this won't find a home soon. It's still doing the festival circuit at this point. But, you know, we'll talk about this soon. But, you know, GBH is shot on video. So I don't know what the trajectory is for the particular film we're talking about. But the documentary, I'm sure, will land somewhere soon.
Yeah, and I could see this popping up, like really popping up on like Arrow, like on their streaming channel or something. And you know, people talking about it. It's got a great poster. It's funny, almost has like an Iron Eagle fonty kind of thing going on. And maybe that's why I said Iron Eagle earlier.
Yeah. Maybe. We should also mention that it was categorized as a video nasty as well, which is.
Yeah, it was, which it's got some stuff in it. It is kind of nasty.
It is.
A great little bit, tagline for this documentary too, which ties in with the film and Cliff Twemlow, what kind of man grabs the Hollywood dream by the bollocks? Legendary life of Cliff Twemlow. So, yeah, that really did provide us, I think, with a lot of context. And the thing I dig about...
I'll pause real quick. It's not going to be where we are right now, but just as we speak, as of the recording right now, David Gregory and Jake West and Mark Morris are all in Manchester screening the film for the first time to a local audience. So excited. I wish I was there, you know?
Oh my gosh. That's awesome. Yeah. I wish, you know what? Yeah. We have some friends in Manchester. They would have dug it for sure.
Sure. Yeah, they would have.
Sure. But yeah, and the poster even looks very Sidaris-y, right? Mancunian Man. So,
well, I mean, the whole thing does. So I want to talk about a couple things here about vanity projects. One of the things that there's almost like a checklist for vanity projects, sex scenes, for the lead, those have to be in there. You have to be a tough guy.
Very cool. Now,
yeah, Cliff Twemlow actually looks like a tough guy. A lot of times these guys don't look so tough, but he actually looks like a tough guy. Yeah. Kind of a superheroic ability to do just about anything. Drive cars, shoot guns, fight, jog, in this case.
They can do everything.
But then you get into the other world of it, which is screenplays, fight choreography, songwriting. This one checks every single box, maybe more so than any other. We've had two that I can think of that had songwriting in them.
John DeHart had the shimmy slide.
He had the shimmy slide, yes. But his fight scenes were, I mean, I'm just going to tell you right now, I mean, John DeHart's fight scenes are maybe a 3 compared to Cliff Twimlow's, which are at least an 8, a 7 or an 8.
The heart ain't no Twimlow.
Ain't no Twimlow, which is really a weird saying. But, yeah, I mean, just the left hook of Cliff Twimlow is enough to take a lot of these guys down. But I love, and not only that, this is that 80s wonder that is shot on video. And I know that that can rub people the wrong way sometimes. I remember being in a room full of like-minded individuals and watching Sledgehammer, and that's a David Pryor film, and you guys are probably aware of it. And it's one of those films where, you know, they discover it. I always describe it this way. It's a horror movie directed by David Pryor who discovered the slow motion button on the video camera and then continued to abuse it for the entire shooting of the film. And so everything happens in slow motion so much in that movie. But video, straight to video back in the day, standard definition video, it had a look and a feel that always felt like, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but it always felt like you were seeing something maybe you shouldn't.
Well, it did have a sort of stark, kind of leery feel to it.
Almost a snuff-like quality. Not to that level, but you know what I mean?
Because
it's, no, I get it.
In tight, yeah. Right? It's always in tight. It's not, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't do a whole lot. So, you know, it just has a quality that, you know, if you're into this kind of thing, you're really going to enjoy it. Because this film has it in spades. I mean, it feels like it's shot on video from second one until the very end. And I found it was like a warm blanket for me personally.
Yeah.
Well, the opening credits for the production company, even.
Video.
There's like three tones, and it's, I was like, it's like a warm bath.
It is like a warm bath. It's funny to give people an idea, like this film, when you're first watching it, I felt like it was kind of this love child of, and this is going to be kind of deep cuts, but I'm sure some of our listeners would know it, the Irish kickboxing film shot on video, Fatal Deviation, mm-hmm. meets German action film Macho Man that we covered on the show. Like it feels like the Mancunian love child of those two films. Right. And it's like, it's got the dance scenes and it opens up and it's the thing that's great too about what Twemlow does and his vision for this film is, and this is where I find myself almost making the distinction between vanity project and passion project. Because I feel like Twemlow made this as a passion project. Yes, there certainly is a bit of vanity.
Yes.
But I feel like as we see in the documentary and as we see his name pop up in the credits over and over, it's more of a passion project for him to get this made.
Yeah.
So
I agree with you. I mean, the vanity stuff basically comes from, I mean, he wants to make sure that you see him with his shirt off.
Oh, yeah. It's a very much a masculine, he's, you know, the tough guy. He beds the ladies.
Yeah.
Everyone knows him by his last name, Donovan. Donovan's back in town. He's almost he's folklore.
Everything is centered around Donovan from the bollocks line and up. Oh, yeah. See, I mean, because, you know, his libido is an important part of this movie as well. So
big time.
It, the sexuality of him, the track suits. I hate to be the one to say anything, but Manchester, excuse my fellow Mancunians for saying anything, but tracksuits and gangster Mancunians kind of go hand in hand.
Well, we get the one dude is kind of like the Bricktop Harry of the film, like the main heavy. He's like the Bricktop Harry meets Stanley Tucci, kind of. I don't know. Kind of weird, but yeah, they love their tracksuits.
Yes.
But the film does what it says on the tin, right? It doesn't have, like some of the films we watch, they want to set this up and they drag ass. Mm-hmm, the worst thing, this film's 73 minutes. It knows what it is. Macho Man's 85 minutes long. It knows what it is.
Yeah.
They're not dragging ass, trying to write some, you know, deep scene. It's whipping ass and having cokey, champagne-soaked disco scenes right out of the gates.
Uh-huh.
I will say, I want to point this out because you know, sometimes when I do films for podcasts or whatever, like my tastes and my wife's are mostly aligned. But once in a while, I tread a path that she will not follow, you know?
Yes.
And so she asked me, you know, am I going to like this? And I said, it's low budget action. Mm. Like that's what I sold her on.
Yep.
And she sat down with me and within 5 minutes, she was like, I would wear all of those outfits in the disco scenes.
Amazing.
And I was like, I would watch you wear all those outfits to disco scenes, you know, all the fringe, all the stuff flailing around.
Yeah.
And she sat down with me for the whole thing, which doesn't always happen. Sometimes she'll be like, oh, okay, 20 minutes in, I'm out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm gonna go do something else. And she watched the whole thing. And, it was just like, it's a bygone era that we'll never get back. Like the cocaine, soaked, you know, consequence-free era of the early 80s is gone.
Yeah.
You know, but we're here now. We can live in it for 73 minutes. Let's do it. You know?
Well, you're right, because there's that scene that would never fly today when he meets the young woman at the bar and she's like, how old are you? He immediately takes her.
We had conversations about that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. That scene would be, as you know, we would say today, that's a problematic scene to Kate's eyes.
Yeah. Well, I think in real life, right, too, Cliff Twimlow, nobody really kind of really knew how old he really was. Like he was at his age. Yeah. He always kind of would be very vague about his age.
You know
what? He said that, well, in the film, he said he could go to jail for 15 years. And, and she asked, how old would he be when he got out? And he said, 15 years older.
Yeah.
He was always, from what I understand, that was him in real life too. Like he was always kind of dodging questions like that.
Yeah. And
he would say he's older than he is to look younger, but there was certainly a fixation with age, but I can't take credit for this, but I do want to say it. So Bleeding Skull, which, you know, great website. Yeah. They talk about a ton of shot on video stuff. Mm-hmm. They're real connoisseurs on Letterboxd. And I think this perfectly sums it up. They called this film dad action. Like that's the genre, dad action.
Well, you know what? I'm a dad and I'm really into action. And this fits that moniker for me.
Well, it does.
I agree. Yeah.
It's so good. It's like bluesy riffs.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to a couple things you brought up. So why does this movie work? Because some of these don't work, right? But why does this movie work? I think this movie works because it's very bare bones. It's very simple. Man gets out of jail. They need him because gangsters are roughing the clientele up and the owners of these bars. He kicks ass, takes names.
Beds
the ladies. We have a homoerotic jogging scene that has to be seen to be believed.
It ends with a nice tackle, like there's a bromance. Yeah. Like it's slow-mo, white pants, it's Rocky II.
It's pretty amazing. There's a couple of jogging scenes that are amazing, actually. The female jogging scene is...
There's so much jogging in this movie. It's amazing.
Yeah. There's like a make-cute jogging scene in this, too.
Well, I mean, it's so weird. Yeah. It's like I sat down to watch this, and the one thing I didn't think I was going to be watching so much of was jogging. But there's a lot of jogging going on. And...
condition to take on the underworld in Manchester.
Yeah, it's very important, right? So, but why does this movie work? I think it's a couple things. One, Cliff Twimlow is, his face is good, and he's trying to make a Charles Bronson movie. He even mentions Bronson, I think, at least twice in the movie.
He does.
So he knows what he's doing. He knows he's probably a Bronson fan. Bronson films are very simple, right? It just means that Charles Bronson is the man, and he will kick ass and take names. The very simple formula, it works perfectly. He knows that, and he takes it and he doesn't put any fat on it. It's very lean as far as storytelling elements go. Is it a bit amateur? Yes. But because you know the through line of the story, because you know who the good guys and the bad guys are, and even the bad guys, the bouncers, they're fun. They're fun, right? The big heavy guy was like, now we're really going to work out. You know, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's all there on the TV for you. And I won't say on the screen because, again, it's shot on video. So it's all there on the CRTV or whatever you had back in the day.
The smaller the screen, the better.
Yes.
Yes.
And it would work even better that way. But if I could have found this film as a teenager growing up, unfortunately, I don't think I'm pretty positive I never came across this. I would have remembered that cover and I would have rented this. There's no doubt about it.
One of us wouldn't have.
Yeah. I mean, a guy in a tuxedo with blood and an axe in his hand. Come on.
Even, which I don't think actually happens in the movie at all.
No. No, I don't think it does. But I would have rented this easily, and this would have been something I would have shown people. I would have dubbed this tape, and I would have shown it to people over and over and over again because it has all the elements that work. It has at least one moment of or one scene where the violence gets a bit more extreme. In Sheila's bar, for the record. And I love that all the bars, you can clearly tell what bars they're in because they make sure they shoot the signs of the bars.
Yeah.
You know, the zoo and Sheila's bar. And I think there's another bar, but either way.
Was it the Rainbow? The Rainbow?
The Rainbow, yeah.
Rainbow Club?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was down at the Rainbow Club.
Yeah, that's where they go out for the romantic dinner, right? I mean, because, you know, I think that's where they go. I believe, because he talks about taking her out for a nice romantic dinner, and I'm like, I don't know if that's the place to go, but whatever, Cliff. You know, he's a man living in his own legacy, but it does.
We don't know Manchester.
Yeah, we don't. That's true. We don't know. We can't speak. We are not Mancunians. We can't speak to this in any way, shape, or form. But I just think all the simple elements of this story make it work. Now, a lot of these, you know, some folks might see this and think to themselves, well, Sammy Will and Josh don't know what they're talking about. This movie is very amateurish and everything else. Again, I'm saying it is amateurish, but they have the earnestness, the love of these kinds of movies, and they take it where it needs to go. There's a guerrilla nature of it. They got a car scene in here. The fight scenes, while
guns.
While clearly choreographed, are still fun. They're good. There's balls being grabbed, or bollocks, if you will, being grabbed.
Lots of bollocks being grabbed.
Yeah, there's all kinds of fun stuff going on in this movie. I got to say, for 73 minutes, I was never bored. I was never bored, and I thought I would be, because one of the things these films fall into is long scenes of dialogue with amateur writers, because they don't have enough money to shoot action and stuff like that. The key with this film is it's 73 minutes and they just kind of keep the story going along. And honestly, I think one of my favorite things about this movie is that Twemlow doesn't take himself too seriously. He's earnest, but he's willing to make fun of himself. I.e. the Yogi Bear scene, the stuffed animal in the bed.
My wife and I, okay, so I will say, like, I feel like this film is expertly written. You know, he's not a writer, but some of the dialogue in this thing is just fucking incredible.
It is.
There is a good choice cuts.
And, you know, the early, I most of my notes are just straight up dialogue from the movie. And before they bring him in, there's a sequence where they're talking to him and he says, or they say, you know, there's no pride in empty pockets. And he says, there's no pride. There's no pockets in a shroud.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Just incredible stuff. And that bear sequence, I was like, I don't want to spoil it for anyone because I want you to experience the movie, but you feel like this gigantic beast of a man just fucked a 4-foot stuffed animal.
Yeah.
You know, because there's this very elaborate dream sequence, you know, and that bear looks like he got it, you know.
The bear got it good. But, you know, the other thing, and I don't want to forget to mention this, is it feels like Twemlow, she didn't like the bear, a lot of stuff. It feels like Twemlow is also a fan of, like, this feels really pulpy to me. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, he wrote some books, some kind of pulpy beach novels.
So we should bring that up at some point. Yeah, he was, I mean, I didn't bring that up, but he was a novelist as well.
Yes.
This guy did everything.
He did everything, man. But there's very pulpy stuff in this. It feels very like Mike Hammer, kind of gumshoe, you know, he's you know, bedding the ladies and punching out the bad guys. And
he has a knack. He has a knack for the pulpy dialogue, pulpy action hero genre.
But he's I feel like Cliff Twemlow is the guy we all wish that we were. Like we have these ideas in our heads, but he acted on them.
Yeah, you know? We talk about it. He bees about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
He does bees about it.
He bees about it. There's no doubt about it.
Don't talk about it. Cliff Twemlow is about it.
Yeah. He sells himself and it just I don't know. He has that special something that makes me not want to look away. I mean, I've seen hundreds of these kinds of shot on video movies. This one never felt like I just never felt like a down period at all. Like, I felt like this movie knew what it was from the beginning to the end.
Well, it does. But that's where, again, I get that Burt Reynolds vibe. I know Burt's a little more playful, but there's playful moments in this, like the bear scene.
There's totally playful moments in this. The moments between him and Chris are totally playful. They're Dom DeLuise-esque.
They totally are. And there's stuff that's very kind of make cute, like you would get with Burt and his love interests. And it just... it feels very Burt to me. And like, because Burt loved like that 40s stuff, right? Mm-hmm. He loved, you know, Bogey and all that stuff. He loved it. So he also, what else Cliff loves though is disco long butt. So
yeah.
He loves the disco long butt. He loves to shoot. So he shoots, his film shot so low to the ground.
Is that a type of fish in Only Manchester or something? The disco long butt?
But he shoots so low to the ground. Even Ozu would be like, come on, dude, you got to lift that camera up a little bit. Yeah. Right? But it's great. A couple lines I want to mention, speaking of his writing, because Josh and you had mentioned his writing. Right after he beds that that young hostess, he comes out and they go, oh, Donovan, where have you been? And he goes, I've just been getting the feel of the place.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Which is amazing.
At some point.
One of my favorite lines is there's a character who becomes somewhat important in the second half of the film who looks like Ferris Bueller.
Yes.
Who brings a girl in and he mentions to Donovan, who's actually doing his real job standing at the door for once in the film.
Yeah.
And he says that he's the big hard type. And the guy says, and Donovan says, I didn't know it was showing, which was one of my favorite lines in the whole movie.
Yeah. That is a good one, man.
I don't remember. I didn't write it down as a quote, but I don't remember if he says it in the movie or not. But at some point he does. I have in my notes here that he's in touch between the darkness and the light.
That was my next note. That was my favorite time to become sentimental. Right now, between the darkness and the light.
I love that
his main squeeze in the movie when he finally like gets, you know, involved with her, orders a martini and whiskey, which is not a thing. Like that's
a power move by Quiff.
There you go. See, I knew you were so earlier before we started recording, I accidentally called him Quiff Twemlow. And there's something about the name Twemlow that makes you want to say Quiff, and I don't know what it is, but I keep getting tied up on it, and I'm glad that Will is the first one to call you Quiff.
And you know, also like later, I think when she drinks her martini and whiskey, and then he takes her home, and I think he just pours her a straight vermouth, and I was like, what the fuck is happening? Who is this woman?
Yeah, the dames drink hard in Cliff's, in Donovan's world, man.
Yeah, in Manchester. That's right, man. They're that fish, man, that disco long butt. They drink like a fish.
Man. Speaking of fish, if you at some point when the documentary releases to the world, there is a long sequence of a killer fish film that never got made.
Oh, that's such a tragedy it didn't get made.
This is a tragedy.
It looks absolutely brilliant, and I'm going to imagine it in my head until I die.
Yeah.
Joan Collins.
Yeah.
Joan Collins.
One of the things about the Quiff Twemlow, the Quiff Twemlow story, one of the things about the Cliff Twemlow story that is going to be heartbreaking for me is just that I'm going to go through the rest of my life wishing that the Pike got made, and a couple of his other films got made.
The Ibiza one, I wish that fit got finished.
Yes.
The one where he shot in Grenada, like live footage, like with the invasion.
Yeah, the invasion, yeah.
He's got a little Roger Corman in him, man.
Yeah, he does. For sure. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing.
That's what I mean. Like, Twemlow is the kind of guy that, like you said, he was about it. And that's something that's so admirable. And the documentary, I think, does a really good job of showing off all the wacky, zany stuff, but it also has a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a soul, and it kind of talks about some kind of heavy stuff, you know, as far as his life in it, right? So really, really good. How about this? Not good, but it's uttered by our heavies in the film, early in the film, just to establish how gross they are. Talk about lines that would be problematic today. So they're doing like a toast, and they go... This is something, some virgin drink. He goes, this is the first virgin I've had in 6 months.
Yeah. That's in my notes also.
Yeah, that's that'd be a problem.
Oh, man.
What else do we got here?
I know going through his filmography, one of the things that kind of caught my eye was that some of his music was uncredited, but put in Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. That's interesting because... What people may not, well, they won't know. Well, I guarantee you people won't know. So we should mention that Cliff got a lot of his money from, because he was a prolific composer of music that was used on television shows in the UK. He made a lot of money off of that stuff. And he would funnel that money into films. And that's kind of how he would get going. Now, eventually that kind of tapped out for him. That's what the documentary teaches us. But for a while there, he was living kind of high on the hog, as we say here in the American South, and kind of able to kind of make a career out of it and kind of fund these projects that he was working on. And again, it's a shame that a lot of them didn't get finished. I don't know how many of his films are even available to see. I need to see. I want to see the sequel to this one the most, but I don't know if it's out there anywhere. But there is another Steve Donovan picture known as Lethal Impact,
which that title we've probably covered three films on this show titled Lethal Impact.
Yeah. Probably. Well, you know, the film the one thing that made him basically comfortable for life was the theme for Crown Court, which I'm looking at now, was, you know, on the air from 1972 through 2007, which is 14 years after he died. And so he was fine.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, he did well.
He did. He had enough money to fund his creative endeavors. I just want to shout out the one henchman in this who's got worse hair than Frank Severo, the Italian-American actor in The Goodfellas.
Oh, yeah. Everybody knows Frank Severo. Yeah.
The one dude's hair in this, man.
Yeah, he comes
that
up.
Was I think that was the guy that, if you watch the documentary, is the guy that was into Muay Thai at the time.
Oh, it might have been. Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
So he was like, it was exotic, you know, in 1982.
Yeah. That's right.
And there's another. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Because, I mean, he would surround himself with these guys, these type of tough guys.
Oh, there's tons of them. Yeah, there's tons of the guys that were bouncers with him, and guys were into weightlifting and martial arts. Like, he lived a very GGTMC life.
Oh, for sure.
Very GGTMC. So we get a henchman in this that's kind of the love child of, like, late 70s, Do You Think I'm Sexy, Rod Stewart, and Richard Norton.
I have Rod Stewart hair in my notes also.
Yes, and he's got, like, a silk shirt on. He gets pounded.
I thought you guys said that, but, I mean, my thought was, I was laying there, I was watching, and I was like, is he getting beat up? Is he getting punched by the lead singer of Kaja Goo Goo?
Yeah.
A little Kaja Goo Goo-esque.
Right. I mean, a little Rod Stewart, a little Kaja Goo Goo, a little, you know. But I didn't feel like that guy was too shy. I felt like
Twemlow wasn't too shy with the left and right hammers, man.
Yeah. I mean, and shortly thereafter, you have the he's chilling, and then there's like this crazy red curtain, you know, where the villains show up, and it looks like it could be the opening of a gay porno.
Yes.
And it continues to be a gay porno for about 5 minutes.
Yep.
Except you don't see any dick. And so it's pretty incredible.
It is pretty incredible, man. But also is incredible later on is it's very First Blood-esque.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's crazy because it's First Blood-esque, even to the point where we get the on-the-nose line of, Donovan, you're not out of the woods yet. And you get the dirt bike versus foot chase. But what's cool about that is I have to think that that Twemlow wrote this or composed this music with Giorgio Moroder in mind, because it feels like the Midnight Express theme.
Hmm. That's interesting.
First Blood moment. So,
okay. All right.
I like that, man. I like that.
I didn't pick up on that for watching it, but I can see it now.
I don't have a ton more notes. I mean, we kind of talked about stuff like as we were going. Just, I love that he used the name Peter Reno. That's a pretty great name. That seems like a Sedaris character in and of itself.
Yeah.
So. Well, I mean, I'll just kind of chime in with a few thoughts here and then kick it over to Josh. But I'll say that, again, this is 73 minutes long. I would argue that this is incredibly entertaining. It's both something you can watch ironically and kind of laugh at, but it's also something you can watch that is actually pretty decent for what it is and very well made. The action is good. I mean, it's not the fight scene in The Killer like we talked about, you know, where you got professional people hired to do these things, but it is good for a bunch of guys in Manchester. I mean, they even do a falling off the roof stunt. I mean, they go all out here. The guns are fun. The car chase is kind of fun. I enjoyed everything about the movie. They even managed to work in some bear breast at some point. They know exactly the audience they're going for here. And what I love about the Steve Donovan character, and I don't know if it's something, Will didn't really talk about it, but what I love about him is there's a bloodlust. They kind of talk about it, that once you get Donovan started, you can't stop him. He's gonna see it through. And that's kind of, you know, that's something they never talk about in Charles Bronson movies. But one thing about Bronson movies is, you know, the characters he plays, they do have a certain level of bloodlust. Like they're gonna wipe out every element of whatever disease is plaguing whatever small town or area that is, you know, causing a problem, i.e. Death Wish 3. But, you know, I think of these things and why they are so entertaining all the time. Why does it work sometimes and sometimes it don't? I sometimes see big budget action movies, and I almost said action pictures, like I'm, you know, from the 40s. But like Marty Scorsese or something. Like I've seen that's a great picture. Great picture. But that was my Marty Scorsese impersonation right there. But what I love is I never once thought watching this that Twemlow and his group of folks, they weren't just trying to make Cliff Twemlow a star. They were in this to make a fun movie. Now, obviously, they were in this to make a profit, but that's the business. But I always felt like, even after watching the documentary and seeing the other films they made, I felt like they were always trying to make fun, entertaining movies. And there's a big difference in the Vanity Project world between making fun, entertaining movies and making movies where you look like a $1 million. Like you make no wrong decisions, you get all the sex scenes, all that kind of stuff. Twemlow, even though he does hit those marks on the checklist, again, the key is he's not afraid to poke fun at himself. He's not afraid to mention Charles Bronson, arguably at that point, in my opinion, even though Stallone is much bigger star probably at that point. I mean, the action guy from the 70s, you know, that everybody knew as the, you know, six pack and muscles and guns and a tash, as he says in the movie, like Bronson without the tash. Yeah. I just think pound for pound, I was surprised at how much I enjoyed this film. Like I smiled the entire way watching it, and it's kind of now at this point, this is going to be like one of those ones, you know, if you look at the history of our show, there's these movies that I keep wishing people would put out. Parole Violators is one. And
yeah,
there's a couple others. I mean, I, The Jury got a Blu-ray release, thank God. And there's some other ones, but this is, this is one of those movies. This is one of those movies that one of these boutique labels needs to clean up as much as they can and get it out there in some way in a proper release, because I think it's an important artifact, definitely to the shot on video format, but to the 80s action format in general, which was arguably the glorious decade of action cinema, right? I mean, you got Hong Kong, you know, knocking it out of the park all the time back in those days. And everybody was just trying to one-up each other. And these guys, they have nothing. And they're trying to one-up themselves. And there's a charm to this that I can't describe in words. And I can't describe why it works. The movie just has a great feel, if that makes sense. It just feels right. The whole time I'm watching, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, this feels like you could put Charles Bronson in this movie and it works. You could put maybe even Chuck Norris in this movie and it works. So it's that well written as far as this genre goes. And I enjoyed it. I mean, you won't see Charles Bronson doing, you know, love scenes like that and everything else. But yeah, I don't really have a whole lot of notes really to add. I do love the big Nick recall. He comes back around later in the bar scene with the bare-breasted lady and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I mean, this movie just feels like a hangout movie. Like a, you know, you put the three of us in a room. We're like, hey, let's throw GBH on. You know what I mean? It feels like that kind of film. And we're like, you know, we got time to watch GBH and something else.
I wish I had the tape.
Yeah, definitely. I wish I had a poster. Like, I would definitely put that poster up in, like, you know, whatever theater room I have in the future. I would definitely have that GBH poster up because people would be like, what is that? I want to see that. Like, okay, well, you do. Come hang out with me. I'll show it to you. I mean, the good news is it is on YouTube, which I don't know if we mentioned, but I think I did in the beginning. So it is out there for everybody to see. But I would like a proper release of this. And this just feels like a – and that's really all I got to say, because Will said so much more about the film. So I'll kick it over to Josh, see if he has anything else to add.
I mean, you guys really summed it up. This is like I said, this is one that I've been waiting on for a long time. I had a general understanding of what it was, but it's impossible to really understand the way it hits you until you watch the whole thing and you're like, yeah, this is the stuff. Like, this is what we want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This is what we go digging for, right?
This is why we keep looking in those dark crevices, you know, for years and years and decades, is to find this.
Yes.
You know? And like you said, like with GBH, it feels like the tip of an iceberg that I want to keep digging into. I want to go and find, you know, the movie that he shot in Ibiza and like all these other films that are mentioned in the documentary. Like and a lot of the in the documentary, they mentioned that a lot of these weren't finished, you know, or some of these weren't finished. And I just want to see what they did. You know, it's perfect. And I realize it's shot on video, and I don't know, you know, Severn Films has their sub-label Intervision, which also does shot on video stuff. So I'm kind of hoping that some of this stuff makes its way over, because there is no like real legitimate release of this in the States. And I don't think there's been anything since the 80s for the film, but it has such a reputation, especially overseas, like not necessarily over here, but you know, I wasn't until I started honestly like digging into the Gentleman's Guide years ago, I didn't really understand how deep this well went. And this feels like, you know, hitting pay dirt. You know, it feels like we struck oil, and now I just want to keep digging into this well, you know, and find what else there is, because it's so amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me of when we hit the Sean Donahue well, and we did Parole Violators, and then we ended up turning around doing Blood Hands. Yeah.
Yeah. What a double, man. Hey, let me just say this to piggyback on what you guys have said, talking about this film and what it means. One of the things I want to mention earlier was, this is you know, we talk about regional horror a lot, but this is regional action.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Twemlow adored Manchester. He was very proud to be from Manchester. He wanted to make regional tough guy, regional action films. And there's something I really admire about that. You know, and this is going to sound very sentimental, and I know I'm a sentimental guy, but I really believe this in my heart of hearts. When I was watching that documentary, and there's a few guys on talking about watching it as kids, it made me think of what I always say to my kids, and I don't necessarily mean it in this sense, but there's a lot of ways this can fit, and this is one way, is, and I mean this with a straight face, representation in film matters. And can you imagine if we all grew up in Manchester, and we're like 11 or 12 years old, and we get this at the video store, and this guy has our accent, and these are places we know. Like, this becomes like this fairy tale of just, you know, sweat and insanity and, you know, muscle. And it's just, I really loved it that local kids in the north of England could have watched this and thought, yeah, this motherfucker sounds like us, and he's cool as shit.
And you just, can do it. That's the thing. Like, you can do it.
That's right. And I love that about this.
Yeah. 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 I agree with that.
100%. I mean, I have that thought. Like, where I grew up, there wasn't really anything. I grew up in Northern California where there wasn't a whole bunch, but, and this is, it's a million miles away from GBH, but like, I remember like when I grew up, you know, when my parents split when I was a kid and I was living with my grandmother and my grandfather, and they were living in a town called St. Helena, which is in Napa Valley. And like Pollyanna was shot there. So I was like, okay, Pollyanna is that's now my heritage, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Robert Louis Stevenson, you know, for Treasure Island and all that stuff. Like, he lived there. Like, it's those things where like, oh, well, people lived here that did great things. Maybe I can do great things.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's inspirational, right?
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. I used to feel that way about Stripes. I remember Stripes, a lot of it was shot in areas that the scene where Bill Murray stops on the bridge. I mean, I still cross that bridge every now and then. So I think that was
Lost Boys for me when I moved to Santa Cruz, like as a teenager.
Yeah.
And going to the you know, the train trestle that goes over, you know, a little bay in Santa Cruz is where all the boys and Lost Boys were hanging off. And, you know, the boardwalk there is where they all went, you know, there. Like, it feels like I'm in something that is eternal.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're a part of something. Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a great feeling.
That's exactly what it is. Hey, speaking of being part of something, John St. Ryan, shout out to him. Let's connect the GGTMC dots. Stars in American Cyborg Steel Warrior with Joe Lara.
is that Big Nick?
That's Big Nick, man. He's got third billing.
Oh, nice. I didn't know
he's
that.
He's the heavy in the film.
I don't know why I wouldn't have known him. I'm a bit of a Joe Lara fan, so I don't know how.
I consider myself a bit of a Joe Lara aficionado.
There's not a lot of Joe Lara aficionados out there, but, you know, we're two of them.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't know this. I guess I'm going to have to look through John St. Ryan's filmography. Is that everything? Is that everything we want to say about this movie?
I mean, you mentioned it earlier, but I just strongly recommend, you know, go to YouTube, find it, the one from 1983, because there are a couple, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, 73 minutes, there's a lot of dumb shit we do for longer than that. That is way worse than this, you know?
Yeah. Definitely true. Definitely true. Stuff you could go to jail for. You won't go to jail for watching this.
No.
Wow. He's still working, John St. Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Still working. Just did Out of the Wild back in 2019. Wow. How about that? Good for him.
Good for him.
He does have some presence. I got to say, the Big Nick character. Yeah. You know, he's noticeable, mm-hmm. right? So.
Yeah.
All right, Will, let's do make or breaks, MVTs.
So I didn't really mention it, but the moment in this film that kind of really, I think, highlights kind of the insight and the heart that Twemlow had with the film is the end of this film. Like, it gets pretty nuts. And then the end, you're like, it's almost, I don't want to say it's like Joe, like the film Joe the Avildsen films, bringing it back to him. But okay, it's a pretty shocking ending. You're like, holy shit.
Yeah. There's an inspiration behind it, but I don't want to mention it because it'll give the movie away.
It'll tell it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I really love the, I mean, I love all the, like the GGTMC stuff, but the end just, it just hammers you, right? You're like, whoa. And just kind of brings everything back into focus. So I could go with Disco Long Butt, Cokie dance scenes, the lovemaking, the jogging montages, the homoerotic jogging montages. Take your pick.
Yeah.
Multiple jogging montages. But I'm going to go with that finale, man. I think it really hits. And then I would bet the farm that we're all going to have the same MVT.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty easy on this one.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy on this one. Again, when you look at someone that has a passion project and they do it all, they wear every hat and just they bring it across the finish line. Kudos to them, right? So for us, for me, I'm going to speak for me. I'll let you guys speak yourselves. It's the Twemlow, man. Like, shout out Cliff Twemlow for bringing it across the finish line, making this sort of mythic, very GGTMC character, Steve Donovan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. And my score for this one's a 7.5 out of 10.
Nice.
This one's super fun. It's going to tick all your boxes. Again, this is a shot on video movie, maybe made for like $80,000 or something. It's very competent for the money.
Yeah.
It's scratch your itch. It knows what it is. It does it with care and heart and love. Tremolo just wanted to make movies, the kind of movies he loved, and he pulls it off wonderfully here.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. 80,000. That might be a close to correct number. I don't know. It might be a little less than that. It might be a little bit more. I don't know.
Hard. But it's definitely not.
Yeah. Know. I mean, it's hard to tell. Movies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hard to tell. Okay. Yeah. My make or break. I really love the. There's so many scenes I love, for the record. There's so many moments I love. The jogging scenes, the scene where he gets out of the prison, the conversations he has there. Just so many, but I enjoy the bloodlust scene in Sheila's bar when he's had enough, and even the great moment, like where he has the line where he says they ruined a perfectly good pair of teeth or whatever, or a set of teeth when they took it off an ass or something like that. I don't know. I'm assuming it's a donkey joke or something, but, it works. And, that scene is incredibly brutal. For what it was a bit of a stunner. It was like, wow, well, this movie just amped up the action a little bit. But his face, you know, he's so intense in that moment. I like that scene a lot. So I called it the Sheila bar scene, but I think that was another fight that took place. But I think that maybe that took place where he confronts all the bad guys in Sheila's bar as well, just not in the pool hall part of Sheila's bar. Confusion on the geography of the bars in the Manchester.
They took what they could get.
Yeah. MVT is definitely Twemlow. There's no doubt about it. Music, writing, lead. He's got it all going on here. This is his thing. And even though he didn't direct it, you just get the sense from watching the documentary piece that we got to watch, which was a gift, that, you know, he was obviously heavily involved in everything with his movies. Yeah,
thank you, Severin.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Severin.
Yeah, definitely thank you, Severin. And my score, I'm going to go just a little bit higher than Will. I've often said this over the years, that these there's certain movies that just have a quality. They aren't masterpieces, but they're what we call GGTMC classics. This, to me, is in that level. It is a GGTMC classic. It's right there with Eye of the Jury and films like that. This is easily, for me, an 8 out of 10. I enjoyed every second of this. It's short, it's breezy, it's fun, it's violent. And again, you can watch it ironically as well. It works both ways. And that is a quality that I don't think a lot of films can brag about. That's one of the things I remember when we did our review of Eye of the Jury. It's so ridiculous, but at the same time, it works, right? So you got to have movies like this. Thank God there's movies like this. They really just kind of rejuvenate my love of movies. So, yeah, 8 out of 10 for me.
All right, great. Well, you know, you guys both glossed over it, or didn't gloss over it, but mentioned it. So I'm going to go ahead and take the reins here. The jogging scenes, for me, that's my moments. You know, it's There's a jogging scene with his best buddy Chris, who it is Rocky II. It's Rocky and Apollo on the beach, but in some random park in Manchester. It's complete with, you know, very, I mean, it feels like a not subtle homoerotic humping at the end. There's also terrible jogging with his new girl, who apparently doesn't know how to swing her arms when she's running.
Doesn't know how to run at all, as a matter of fact.
She doesn't know how to run, not one bit. It's the idea that for Cliff Twemlow, for Steve Donovan, that jogging is what brings him closer to people. You know, that's the common thread.
You're right.
That if he cares about you, he will jog with you. And no matter how terrible you are at it, you will do it.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was a very unique sort of experience for the film. That's his tell. That's how you know he's into you. Platonically or not, or maybe not so platonically. We'll never know.
Yeah, sure.
Was that? I mean, and you know, Cliff. We are all in agreement. Cliff is the alpha and the omega of this film.
Yeah,
he is the reason for its existence. He is the reason for its success. He is the reason that we're all talking here in such glowing terms about the film. I don't think this could have happened with anyone else. Cliff Twemlow's performance and writing and composing and performance throughout the film is just exceptional. And it's I am honestly, whenever you bring something to people that you respect and whose opinions you value, there's always a little bit of concern about, like, is this going to land the way I want it to? And the way that you guys have responded to this, it makes me feel like I didn't waste your time, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And I don't feel like this is a waste of time for anyone, not least of which for the fact that it's only 73 minutes. But,
yep.
You know, it's a brilliant 73 minutes, and I feel like anyone who's a regular listener will really appreciate what GBH has to offer.
Yeah,
I'll go with a solid 8 as well, just like Sam. It does what it says on the tin, as they say in Manchester. I'm sure, probably. it's exactly what you want it to be. And I really, really want to see all of Cliff Twemlow's other films now, finished or unfinished. I want to see whatever he did, because if this is what he has to offer, then I'm in.
Yeah. Got to see that werewolf movie and that Eye of Satan movie.
Eye of Satan is incredible. Eye of Satan is my jam. That's where I am right now.
God. Nice. Got to see those. Yeah. He realized once the action stuff wasn't working for him anymore, he went the horror route. So I got to get in there.
And it looks like the sci-fi one, the one where they're just basically in the fucking Millennium Falcon. Like, give me that.
Yeah. That one or the one. Can you believe he almost worked with Ollie Reed?
Yeah. Oh, that would have been great. That would have been wild.
He didn't finish Pike. I want to see Pike.
Oh man, yeah. I gotta read. I guess the Pike is out there in written form, and I guess I need to see if I can find a copy.
Yeah,
it's a novel he wrote about a killer fish. You know, some of those pikes are pretty dangerous, as Cliff himself said. So
he did say,
yeah. Yeah, it's always great when somebody comes on the show and introduces us to something. So yeah, I understand that feeling too, though, because I've done that. I've been on other podcasts where I've been like, "Hey, you guys ever done this?" And they're like, "No," and I'm like, "Oh, I gotta come on when you guys do that." And of course, I get the butterflies. I get the moment where I'm like, oh man, they're not going to like it. I'm the only guy that likes that kind of stuff, you know, but then, you know, thankfully most people usually end up liking it, but yeah, that it is great to be introduced to something. So Josh, we thank you very much. Definitely.
Oh, I'm so happy. This could be the place.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, this is definitely the home for Cliff Twemlow and GBH and probably most Twemlow jams, I would say.
Would be right in the wheel. Like that cinematic Valentine is always well received here.
Yeah, definitely. We want to thank Josh, as always, for coming on the show. Again, you can see GBH if you look around on YouTube. Again, look for the kind of still of the gentleman in a tuxedo, no tie, a lot of blood, and an axe.
White tuxedo, white tuxedo.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, you know, red against white. I mean, it works, right? Not for the squeamish, it says.
Yeah.
So, definitely check that out. But Josh, thanks so much for coming on, man. Again, you have an open door policy here. I know time is always a thing, but you know as well as we know that, you know, anytime you want to come on, all you got to do is ask, and we'll more than be glad to welcome you into the arms of the GGTMC, as always.
The muscly, oily arms.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I feel like I may have topped out here. I don't know if I can bring it again.
Oh.
This is the mark.
I'll
see gain of programming.
You know, we've been doing this for 15 years, and you know, here we are. We're still coming across stuff like this. So I don't know if it'll ever tap out. To be honest with you,
man.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing it for a long time. Yeah. Well, if we know anything, we know that you're always looking, and we'll know that if you hit us up with something, we'll be like, "Whoa, we better check this out."
You can't keep a good man down.
That's right. Somewhere between the light and the darkness.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where you find the sweet spot, man.
That's right. Yeah, that's called the taint. Anyway. Oh, man.
GBH is the taint of the GGTMC.
Yeah,
yes, that's right.
Yes. What a quality. What a quality to have. Wow. Anyway, we want to thank everybody else that listens, and definitely check out our sister and brother podcast out there. Not a Bomb, Watch Skip Plus, Chin Stroker versus Punter, Watch Skip. I already said Watch Skip Plus. What's the other ones? See Here.
Album.
Yeah.
Mary Clickers.
There we go.
You might have said, I'm too busy thinking about the bulging perineum of the GGTMC right now.
Ooh, the bulging one.
The GG
nice.
Taint MC.
Wow. Pulling back just a little bit to bulge it. There we go. We've all seen those videos. They're less than 73 minutes long, most of those. But
I mean, that's all I see of them.
Clips. Yeah. The clips with a Z. But anyway, we just want to thank everybody. Will, do we, I guess it's my turn to select next week, and I really haven't thought it through very well. I have some ideas, but it's not going to get released for a while, but I think we can go ahead because I got a review copy. Are you okay with me making a selection?
Hey, select away, man.
And then you can just let me know what you're going to select behind the scenes. I've been wanting to talk about this movie for a long time because, it was a staple of my childhood, and this should tell you a lot about my childhood when I tell you what film this is. And, I just have always wanted to cover it and discuss it with you. And I know you're a fan of the lead, at least. I think it'll be an interesting conversation for us. And it's a genre we don't do a lot, science fiction. So I thought it'd be fun if we revisited Roger Vadim's Barbarella.
Oh, interesting.
Arrow's putting out a Blu-ray of it. I just got a review copy. And I am dying. I mean, I am dying to watch this thing again. I have not watched Barbarella in 20 years. So it's in my Xbox right now. I'm like dying to watch this thing, and I don't want to watch it and let that watch go to waste. I want to watch it and talk about it because I think it has a lot of interesting conversation.
Well, yeah, that's going to be, that was one of the first films my dad and I really talked about, an admiration of. Neither one of us had known the other one was a fan. And
For me, that movie was when I realized there was such a thing as cult movies.
Well, yeah, it's such a unique vision, right? It's going to be fun to talk about, man.
Yeah, there's nothing else like Barbarella. I don't think there's anything else like Barbarella. Maybe there is. Maybe an anime world.
Cherry 2000, but yeah, not too much.
Be fun to talk about, though. I know you enjoy Jane Fonda, and I enjoy all the other, you know, David Hemming in there, John Philip Law. Returning to the show.
Peter Pallenberg. This is going to be fun. Marcel Marceau making his return.
Yeah, Marcel Marceau.
Since Shanks, he hasn't been on our show.
Well, I don't know how many Marcel Marceau films we would cover.
Marcel completist, clearly.
But yeah, Arrow's putting one out, so I got a review copy, so I feel like I can talk about it. So I'll discuss that later. But then you can tell me what you're picking behind the scenes. Again, Josh, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah.
My pleasure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Always great.
Let's make it a much shorter jump between the next ones, man.
Yeah. Again,
please do.
Again, never feel like you're interfering. If you hear us say, hey, we're doing Barbarella, and you say, hey, I'd like to talk about Barbarella. Come on aboard.
It is, man.
We literally, the door is that open, folks. It's not, I mean, our taint has seen a few things. It's open. Trust me. All right, with that, I'll say adios.
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 Thanks for listening. You can find the gentleman at ggtmc.com, and you can email the gentleman at midnightcinema@gmail.com. We'll be right back.